Nice. Soul on ice. I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night, whenever or wherever you are listening. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Kwame, a.k.a. Funky Fresh in the Flesh, and Double Trouble is always in the house. Akil Thomas and Elijah Roberts, a.k.a. Business is about to pick up. What's happening, nephews?
Not much. What are you saying, Kwamster?
Hey, I'm just here, baby.
What's up, Kwamster Rex?
Where did you get that? Like, when did that one, because you're using it a lot.
Just came in my mind. It's going to stick.
I kind of like it.
Kind of like it. Is it a reference because I'm like the old guy of the group?
Obviously, yeah. T-Rex, right?
T-Rex is the baddest, though, so I'll take it. I'll take that. Boys, the big news is out. Okay, we got the call up. We are rocking with the big boys. We are now a part of the NHL family podcast, so I want to give a big shout-out to everybody at the NHL and everybody who has been supporting us on social media. So we just want to remind everybody to please subscribe, rate, review, give us some likes on IG, Twitter, Facebook. We need your support. That's how we're going to grow this movement. So what do you guys think about the fact that we are now a part of the NHL family of podcasts?
It's big, man. It means a lot. You know, right from the start, we came in and we just maybe wanted to do this for fun and we started stepping it up. And I think being a part of the NHL family, it's pretty big, and just going forward, we're going to keep taking it up to the next level.
Yeah, I think it's pretty special just because, you know, Elijah and I were talking about this as a joke and just kind of being like, oh, like we should start a podcast. We should start a podcast. And, you know, here we are. Just got called up from the minors. So we made the show. So it's pretty cool.
It's pretty dope, right, boys? All right. So shout out to everybody who's been listening to us from the very beginning. And, we hope that you'll just, you know, share and let everybody know what we're doing. And, you know, this support has been really cool so far. Brother B, he's been killing it online for our team. For those who don't know, Brother B is our social media guy. He does our graphics. It looks really cool what he does for us.
Well, you find a way to come up with a nickname for everyone within like the first minute of you knowing them.
I don't know what it is, but I just, it's just always about me. I'm always like, yeah, I just can't just look at someone and just call them their name. I have to put something on top of it. So I just, you know, I can't just call him Brian. Hey, Brian's done a great job for us. I got to give him some flavor. You know what I mean?
Some spice on it, right?
So yeah. Got to put some spice on it. So, but he's been killing it. You guys got to admit, he's been killing it because, you know, I was looking back at some of our old stuff that we did, like the Joel Ward graphic. I want Brother B to put that graphic up against like one of the new ones, and just to show how far we have come, especially on that part. So we got to give Brother B a big shout out and thanks for being a part of this, because, you know, it's just going to help us take it to another level. Oh, guess who gave us a shout out on Twitter, boys?
Who?
The Green-Eyed Bandit.
Huh? The one who had Akil Thomas Starstruck?
Had Akil Shook. Remember that, Elijah? Remember?
Okay. Oh. No one remembers that.
For those who do not know who we're speaking of, I'll give you a little sample of it right now.
So, Sarah,
see? I used to get you all the time, but it's the eyes, the green eyes. Stop sticking down her eyes, bro.
Like, the green eye band has them struck.
You know what I mean?
Glasses on, too.
I literally was thinking about that question for so long, and then I forgot it.
Damn. It's a lack of focus.
She had Akil on cloud nine. Those eyes were mesmerizing, and he just could not get any word out. So thanks to Sarah Nurse for that shout out. We appreciate it, and we hope to have her back on the show again. Right, Akil?
Fake news, but yeah.
Anyways, before I let the boys give you guys some of their news, there's some been really cool news out in the hockey world. The LA Kings, they started an inclusion initiative that they say was going to be used to battle racism in hockey and beyond. The leadership role has been given to a friend of the show, Blake Bolden. So congratulations to Blake on her new position. Hopefully she'll be able to open up some doors within that organization as well, do some great things in the community as far as expanding the game of hockey in the minority communities, especially in LA. So big up to the LA Kings for that. Also, shout out and congratulations to Rico Phillips. He's from Michigan. He just landed a new job with the OHL as the Director of Cultural Diversity and Inclusion. Rico won the Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award at last year's NHL Awards. He's a great dude. He's done some great work in the community with hockey and youth, and I know he's going to do a great job in the O. So shout out to the Flint Inner City Youth Hockey Program, which he founded. So a lot of great stuff is happening inside the world of hockey.
So just before I forget, we mentioned Sarah Nurse. We mentioned Blake Bolden. For those of you who want to watch past episodes, we've taken them off all platforms, and we're going to put them on the under the NHL platform within the next week. So a couple of people have messaged me asking where they went, but they're going right back on the NHL. So yeah, give us about a week.
E, what's going on with you, Mike?
Not much. I mean, usually you ask that question, I say not much, just been chilling, but I've actually been up to a lot lately. I went, got a tattoo.
What is it?
So I got a compass inside of a rose, and then I got two people walking towards the CN Tower, and I got the Toronto skyline in the background. So
Who are the two people?
Who are the two people that are walking towards the...
I don't know yet. I don't know. Kind of leaving that up in the air. Could be me and my brother, me and my dad. I don't know yet. But I saw the design and I liked it. And you know, I just kind of rocked with it.
Who else could it be? This guy gets a tattoo on his body of two people and he doesn't know who they are.
Well, it's a silhouette. It's not like... I'll show you guys after.
You take a picture of it. We'll get Brother B to throw it up on our platforms and then we'll get everybody to get the, you know, put their two cents in it.
Right,
and they can... They could maybe add who those two people is. It could be Hansel and Gretel. It could be Ren and Stimpy. Could be whoever you want it to be.
Huh? Yeah, we'll see.
All right.
On top of that, I got a dog as well. I got a golden retriever. He's 8 weeks old. So did that. Started an entrepreneurship class. So I'm keeping myself busy, but it's all good stuff.
Akil, what do you got for us?
Yeah, so... basically my dad coaches in the East Coast Hockey League, as we know, and his head coach that brought him on ended up just being let go. That's just how hockey is. And so my dad didn't know if he had a job next year, basically, because you know, when head coaches get hired, most times they bring their assistant coaches, and so my dad was just kind of on the bubble of not knowing what he was doing next year. And he's a type of guy where he has to know what he's doing like next year. Like he's very organized that way. So he was stressing for a little bit. And basically he found out that the head coach indeed was, bringing an assistant coach. So I could just tell he was pretty bummed out. Like he talked about settling in Greenville. He loved it there. It was perfect for him. So he was definitely a little bit upset and stuff. And, you know, just asking, so like, what are you going to do now? And, you know, he got all like, how he always gets, I don't even know if I'm going to coach. Maybe I should get a real job. He's just sulking. That's just the way he is, basically. And basically, I called him today, and he told me that he accepted a head coach job with the Motor City Rockers of the FHL. So it's in Detroit, basically like 5-10 minutes out of Detroit. And I was like, okay, that's sick. Like, what's Uncle Leonard doing? His brother, basically. And I always just, you know, thought that they'd end up coaching together one day. I think it'd be pretty cool. And not only is he like coaching with my dad, he's actually coming out of retirement and he's starting to play again. So
no,
yeah, he
Leonard's gonna play.
Yeah, so he played for 13 years, like in the minors, you know, Fort Wayne, Bloomington, Peoria, Flint. He played all over the place. He ended up retiring in Fort Wayne or Mississippi, and that was in 2015. So 5 years later, he's going to put the skates back on and they're going to coach and kind of play together. So I think that's pretty cool. And my Uncle Leonard and I are very similar in how we are as a person. Like he would play mini six with me when I was a kid, and my dad would never play mini six with me because he's not like he wouldn't play road hockey. He would never do any of that. He's just an on-ice guy. Whereas my uncle, you know, he's always playing road hockey. He's always playing mini six. He's kind of like me in that aspect. And I always thought like if I retired, and there is an opportunity for me to play again, I would definitely do it. So I think it's just kind of neat how that kind of worked out, and I'm pretty excited to they're going to have so much fun together. So it's pretty cool. Pretty good news.
Yeah, it's crazy how things kind of go full circle and work out. And, you know, my parents have always told me just trust God's plan. And, you know, your dad was stressing. He didn't know what was going to happen. And good things are happening for him, I think. And I think if you ask him, he's probably pretty excited for this job. And, you know, I think that's just a testament to, you know, even when you're stressed and you don't know what's going to happen next, just kind of trust in God and know that he's got the right plan for you. And it's pretty exciting for your dad that worked out. And I've known your dad for quite a bit, and he's a good guy. So happy for him.
Well, good luck to the boys, man. Those guys are some really intense hockey guys. And I honestly think that, you know, who knows down the road, I think those guys have the ability to coach in the AHL. I think they have the ability down the road to possibly one day work their way up into the show. So who knows? Maybe one day, you know, your father might get up there and you might end up, you know, playing for your dad one day in the NHL. Who knows? Or against them. Anything is possible.
Speaking about the show, next week it all starts up. It's pretty exciting. I think baseball's this week, NBA, NHL next week. So me personally, I'm excited to get to watching, and you know, it's going to be competitive, I think, and don't really know who's going to win. My pick is Boston. I don't know about you guys. I think Boston's probably the deepest team. I think they're going to come away with it, but just who are you guys going for?
Oh man, you know, again, I'm a hometown boy, so I gotta root for my Leafs, but don't sleep on the Oilers.
Good chance for Boston, I think. This might be Tampa's year, though. Who knows? But we should put a bracket together. I know we talked about it earlier, but we should do like a, you know, bracket to where we, you know, like a legit bracket. I think we just thought of the first couple rounds, so okay. That's something we could do.
All right, we'll get Brother B to set one up, and then we'll have our brackets to say, you know, what the three of us have picked, and at the end we'll see who's the closest. And do we put anything on this, boys? Is there anything on this? What are we saying? Dinner for the winner.
Dinner for the winner.
So listen, everybody, once again, thank you for joining us. Thank you for rocking with us from the jump start. We're just going to try and, you know, do the best that we can to bring you guys some great shows. We're going to have some great guests for everybody down the road. But today, we're talking about today, we've got some really great guests. So we're going to take a quickie. And then when we come back, we've got Jacob Slavin, Connor Carrick, and from the San Jose Sharks, Evander Kane, right here on Soul on Ice, the podcast. First up, growing up in Vancouver, BC, he has always lit it up as a hockey player since he put the skates on at 3 years old, representing Team Canada in 2008 at the U18. He walked away with gold, and the following year at the World Juniors, another gold. He comes from a sports family. His father, amateur boxer, mother, college volleyball player, uncle, Canadian ball hockey Hall of Famer, cousin, played in the CFL and the NFL, and another cousin boxed at the 92 Summer Olympics in Barcelona. When he was drafted in 2009 to the once Atlanta Thrashers, he became the highest drafted black athlete in the NHL, first round, fourth overall, named after the legend Evander Holyfield. Let's welcome Evander Big Daddy Kane.
Thank you for that intro. Appreciate that.
That was juice.
They're gonna hire you.
Let me ask you guys
this. I don't know how you're not doing intros for
that's the only intro. Just come to the show now.
That's all
we need. Yo, listen. Hey, wait, first of all,
I wouldn't mind.
Let me ask you guys this. Did anybody understand my reference, Big Daddy Kane?
Of course.
Right over my head. Right over my head.
Jacob?
No idea.
Right. He's one of the greatest rappers of all time. Yeah, thanks, Evander. Hey, Evander, quick question for you. Have you ever met Evander Holyfield?
Yeah, I have. I met him my first year in Atlanta. He was living in Atlanta, obviously, and he came to one of our pregame skates, got to meet him, talk to him, hang out with him a little bit, and then came to the game that following night. So I got to know him pretty well. Him and my dad are actually pretty good friends now. Mm. They stay in touch. He always hosted a bowling tournament for charity in Atlanta that brought a lot of different celebrities. And it was really cool to be a part of that and kind of be invited to those things as a really young player.
Is this Evander with the cut air, the bitten air?
No. I'm not that old. I'm only 28 here. So this was definitely after the Mike Tyson fight.
Okay.
I think I was like maybe 11 when I was listening at the radio. And
yeah.
I don't know what happened. I was in the car with my dad. And it was like breaking news. Holyfield's ear gets bit. Mike Tyson, like, holy cow, what's going on?
Yeah. So tell me, you've had a chance to pull out the phone, show the video of you and Matt Cook, because I'm sure he would have been proud of that one.
Yeah, I mean, I got a lot of positive feedback
from that one.
Yeah, I mean, obviously with the type of player Matt Cook was.
Yeah.
And then me only being 18. And
You were only 18 at that. You were only 18.
Yeah, it was my first year. Wow. It was the last game of the season, my first year.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, I think it was Matt Rupt and Goddard kind of coming after me. And I decided not to fight either one of those guys and fight somebody a little bit more in my weight class. I think it was a smart decision.
Smart decision. All right. Next up, this young man was born in Colorado, where they shot one of my favorite movies of all time, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. He was drafted to the NHL in 2012, fourth round, 120th overall. Despite that, he committed himself to higher education, going to Colorado College to play Division I hockey, where he was named NCHC Rookie of the Year and both NCHC All-Rookie Team and All-Conference Second Team back in 2013-2014, that season. It took him 2 years making his debut in the NHL as a defenseman to score his hat trick. Like, I don't understand why that took you so long to score a hat trick, my friend, but we'll talk about that later. Let me introduce you to Jacob Slavin. What's happening, my man?
What's going on? Thanks for having me.
Took you two years.
I've never seen that movie.
You've never seen that movie? You've never seen Butch Cassidy? Oh, come on, bro. Are you a movie guy?
No. Not really, but I'll have to put that one on the list.
Put that one on. Okay, you're not a movie guy. Have you been to the Stanley Hotel?
No.
You know the Stanley Hotel?
No.
The Stanley Hotel is in Colorado, bro. You got to represent your hometown. Okay, so the Stanley Hotel.
It's like going to the Four Seasons.
Exactly, Four Seasons. Never had a stay in a hotel in Colorado growing up, so I never went downtown for a hotel.
I would think you would know it because the Stanley Hotel is it's in the outskirts. It's very famous because you guys seen Dumb and Dumber, right?
Yes.
Okay, Stanley Hotel. Has any of you guys seen The Shining?
No.
Oh, my God. Do you guys like horror movies? Anybody like horror movies?
Can't touch them.
Oh, my God. The Shining. No. Put it on your list, boys. It's a classic. Last but not least, this kid became one of my favorite people when I met him a few months back. He grew up in Illinois, played AAA hockey with the Chicago Fury, who actually retired his number. He made his way north to play in the OHL with the Guelph Storm. In 2013 at the IIHF World Under 18 Championship, he walked away with gold around his neck for the Stars and Stripes. Drafted in 2012, fifth round, 137th overall. He is the only NHL player in history that can say he bust a freestyle with a Grammy Award winning rapper. Stepping to the mic is my homie Connor Carrick. What up, man?
Is today redemption? Are we going again? Like, I needed a heads up. You can't have life left start, you know, jumping in mid-season form and then just throw me the rock like that when I'm sitting on the bench not ready to go.
Hey, man.
I had better in the tank than that. I was, you know, slam poetry junior year in high school. Not a big deal. I thought I had something better in the tank than that, but.
Hey, listen, you held it down for the first couple of bars. I mean, we need some work, but listen, I was still impressed. It's, I knew you had a little flow. If we gave you a little bit more time, I guarantee you, I know you would have done it. But you know what? I swear to you, my friend, you will have redemption on that one day.
I'm going to show up at Clef's house. I'm going to show up at Clef's house and hire him for lessons. I'm like, dude, we gotta put some reps in. I can't get caught cold like that again.
For those who don't know, Connor, Blake Coleman, Bryce Salvador, and Blake Bolden were a part of a great piece that I directed for the NHL called Off Ice, where we had a great conversation about race in the game of hockey. And it was at his house. And man, oh man, Connor, tell me we were not ahead of our time on that one.
I mean, we were. We were texting about it as we were setting up this podcast about, you know, how uncanny the timing was. And, you know, I think that's the purpose of why we're all here today, to try and, you know, chew on some of these bigger ticket items that, you know, society, you know, the attention's there right now, and it's an opportunity for growth.
How are you guys going to remember 2020? And I know I say that knowing that we got 6 months to go, but how are you guys going to remember 2020? Evander, set it off.
I don't know. You're going to remember it from your own personal experiences, and then obviously everything that's going on in the world. You know, I like to stay as positive as I can with a lot of what I do, and try to look for some of the positives that have transpired even thus far. But man, you go back to Kobe passing away, to obviously the coronavirus, to, you know, the social injustice issues and more, you know, black women and black men being murdered by police, and kind of where we're at in a society. And you see a lot of people stepping out into the light, per se. Yeah. And really showcasing their true colors. So hopefully it's a time that we can look back on and say, you know, it had to get a little worse before it got better. So that's the way I'm looking at it.
Jacob, what about you?
I think when I look back on just in July now, so 7 months into 2020, I think the only word that really comes to my mind is just crazy, just with everything that's been going on. But also look back on it, and it's a time for growth. In so many different areas, and we see a lot of people just questioning a lot of things, especially during the whole COVID time. But now, like Amanda said, with all the social injustices that are going on, you just have people checking their own hearts in a lot of these ways, and so just a lot of room for growth as well with everything going on.
Yeah, I think to echo, you know, Kaner and Jacob, you need some stillness for reflection. I think COVID offered that. I think COVID had a lot of people sitting at home. You know, work schedules were, if not completely laid off, totally different. And, you know, the country, I live in the U.S., I live in Chicago, you know, had time and space to have to sit with, you know, some of the videos that were surfacing on, you know, through the power of social media and things like that. And Kaner touched on it, where, you know, Black lives and the interaction with, you know, our police force is not something I think the country's proud of right now. And it's a time of serious reflection. And I think you need a little bit of chaos to adjust order. Otherwise things just kind of remain status quo. And it's an opportunity. I think there's been a great shaking of the norm in the first 6-7 months. And then there'll be, you know, hopefully, I know even for myself, like there should be some growth opportunities. I've done an audit, you know, of my personal life, how I've interacted with, you know, social injustices, habits in my day-to-day life, you know, pre-COVID, that need editing and don't serve me any longer. So, you know, my hope is society at large is that, you know, there's an opportunity here that is unprecedented and can lead to conversations like this and hopefully, more importantly, improved action, you know, morally within our country.
I agree with you. Jacob, when you read the article by Kim Davis, Our Vision, what was your first impressions?
I think trying to think back, I read it a couple of days ago, but just making sure that hockey is a sport that has, I guess, an open door policy for people of color, and just making sure that we are being inclusive as we can and striving for that, not just being okay with how it is now, but actually striving and working towards a different hockey culture, especially here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of my initial takeaway.
You know, I want to keep it a buck with you guys. you know, and it all starts in the title of that article and other articles. Hockey is indeed for everyone. Whereas Akeem Alou's article for the Player Tribune was hockey is not for everyone. Now, I think that it's all in the eye of the beholder, to be honest with you guys. I personally feel that it is for everyone. I love the game, and the game personally gave me a second shot at life and a career. If it wasn't for me, then I don't think that I would have been allowed to create a lot of cool content that I thought was that's very worthy of our world. For example, taking Ryan Reeves to a black barbershop in Las Vegas to speak about race and the perspective of blacks in the game of hockey. But at the same time, I can also understand as an individual who may have gone through something like Akeem, that it might not feel like it is for everyone because they have been judged by the color of their skin and not by their actions on the ice and off the ice as people. Evander, I want to start with you. How do you take the statement by the NHL, hockey is for everyone?
It's a good question. You know, I think, and I've had a lot of these discussions with a lot of different people, including Kim. I think hockey can be for everybody. I don't think it currently is for everybody. And I think, you know, there's hundreds and thousands of examples of why that's, you know, not true. I think the biggest issue I had from an NHL player standpoint was the NHL placing their hockey is for everybody month in the month of February. The month of February has always been a month to celebrate Black history. And to me, I thought it was a bit of a slap in the face. I thought it was poor judgment. And I thought, you know, out of the 6 months during the season, you know, how could you not found another month to have that campaign take a prominent role for the NHL? Also, before Kim even got into the league and became a part of our league, we never celebrated Black History Month. It was it wasn't even a thought. It had no interest within our league, and it was a question I always raised, but never got any answers. And it wasn't until Kim became a part of the league and had her role that we even acknowledged it. So for me, that whole campaign, as great as it is and as important as it is, I thought it was flawed, and I didn't understand the messaging. For me, it just seemed like they were trying to overlook Black history and really, you know, our Black players in the game.
And with that point, that's why it's so important that an industry like hockey become more inclusive, because it's just like what you said. It's not until Kim Davis came into the league that she recognized that all these different causes should not fall under 1 month, and we should separate them, which has happened in the last 2 years with Black History Month having its own spot in February and teams given the opportunity to celebrate it in the way that they can. I think it was really cool when I was in San Jose, Evander, we got to connect at the Black History Month truck, and you know, stuff like that is definitely what's needed. Connor, I want to go to you with that one as well. What do you think about the statement, hockey is for everyone?
I think it's a goal. I think, you know, hockey has a lot of barriers to entry. And I think you're seeing that, you know, whether that's with the cost, you know, there's an argument it's socioeconomic. But then when you see the makeup of our teams, that's the result that matters, whether it's from front office on down to players. Hockey clearly has barriers at every level that is preventing a more diverse showing, a more diverse group of players. And I think that it's a great goal for hockey to have. You first need to identify an issue or a problem, and then you can, you know, have solution-based thinking to try to reverse engineer how to get the result you want. And that's what I read in Kim's article, that they were you know, the letter was one of strength, of great leadership, clarity. It was certainly compelling, very clear on what she wants to bring forward to the game. And I think as, you know, current NHLers, it's our job to facilitate further action. I think intent while you know Noble is cheap, it's easy, you know, to want to make things better. Now it's on players like us and leaders within our game to really make sure we see through the change in hockey that I believe is possible. I love this game. It's given me so much, Kwame, like you. I've met, you know, awesome people, but it can be better. And then the last part I want to make on stories, you know, like Akeem's Players Tribune article was respect. I think the amount of respect I have for our Black players and players that come through stories of all, you know, difficult cases. You know, I would get shook up as a young kid when a coach sat me for something that was totally within reason, when a coach said something mean, you know, based off a bad play. And to deal with that in terms of your race, it's a shame. And it's I definitely have a lot of respect for the athlete that is able to, you know, continue their love for the game the best they can in the face of, you know, that injustice.
Jacob, you want to add on to that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's much to add on to that. They're both great answers. But no, I think, like Connor said, is just the action that needs to take place, especially as white players in this game. We need to also, I don't know, we hear the term white ally going around, and we need to make sure we're being that ally for people of color and being advocates and for that and inclusive part of the game. And so, yeah, I think that the action part definitely needs to be had.
So let's talk about the code of silence that hockey players have. When I was doing my documentary, Soul on Ice, Past, Present, and Future, the one thing that a lot of people brought up to me and said to me is that a lot of the players of color are not going to speak about certain things for the fact that there's repercussions. You know, and I really feel it's a shame that a player of color has to feel that they have to be silent. And we all know that that's, you know, just there. Evander, how is that code of silence ingrained in a young player? And I mean, I know you're really outspoken, but do you feel that you have played, have you been a part of that whole, I can't say nothing because I don't want to be benched or, you know?
Yeah. So to your point, you know, I think it's ingrained in you at a really young age. You know, hockey is such a team sport, and you learn that when you first, you know, put your skates on and are a member of your first team. And, you know, it's all about the team first, and those type of things are preached. And that's one of the great parts of what hockey is it is a team sport, and you understand that's what you sign up for. At the same time, it's also the messaging that especially in Canada, that goes along with that is kind of conforming to what everybody else is doing. You know, individuality and personality is looked at, especially as a minority player, in a negative light. It's looked at as an issue. There's some sort of internal, maybe subconscious bias that not only players have, but parents, coaches, etc. And it's unfortunate. You know, I came into the league with a lot of personality. You know, always been a great teammate coming through junior and so on and so forth. I get to Atlanta, things are fine, things are good. You know, I have my first couple of years in the NHL, and then we get to Winnipeg, and it's crazy to me because for the first time I felt I couldn't be myself. Mm. I felt that I became paranoid with everything that I said or did, or and really to me it kind of pushed me into a corner where I felt I couldn't do or say what I wanted to do as a grown man at that point. And I think now I've definitely grown out of that. That's expired, and you know, I'm part of an organization and a group of guys that you know, really push those individual qualities and you know, the uniqueness of individuals. And I think you look at any great team that's won the cup. You look at St. Louis last year. You know, I'm sure that they weren't 20 of the exact same people. You know, they had different personalities, different players, different skill sets that came together as a team to make themselves great. And I think that's how you build great teams.
Jacob, have you ever felt that you couldn't be yourself? Did that code of silence ever affect you in any way, shape, or form as a white player in the game of hockey?
Honestly, no. I mean, I think we definitely have that privilege of not having that code of silence, and that's something that isn't right. But yeah, no, I never felt that I couldn't be myself. So I'm a really strong Christian, and sometimes guys can get kind of weird about that. But even then, there's no judgment there. But I can't speak to the experiences of people of color that they have to that code of silence, because there was no code of silence as a white person playing the game growing up or even now.
Connor, hearing what Evander said about that code of silence and having to hold that in, how does that make you feel knowing that you've played this game, you've loved this game, and to look at a brother in arms like Evander or Chris Stewart or Nazem Kadri, looking at guys like these and to think that they have to be quiet or they have to tone down their personality just to play the game that they love?
Yeah, I think there's great pain in authenticity. It's very tiresome to put on an act every day and try and mute, you know, who you are as a man and as a person. I think hockey has beautiful elements of teamwork. There, you know, every team tries to enforce or, I guess, breed a strong culture. That's a buzzword used a lot in NHL rooms. But I think to Kaner's point, a team of strong individual leaders is one with strong moral character. That's someone where everyone feels empowered to be themselves and to be able to make the decision on what they can bring to the room and be who they are. I think it's really demanding to try to hold back every day and try and think, you know, with the result in mind of what does somebody want and then just trying to pander to that. I think that's very difficult to do. And I don't think it's something – I think the term that gets thrown around is old school. It's a little old school. But for me, I've experienced insecurity in my life. I've experienced anxiety in my life. I know how uneasy that feeling can be. And so all I know is moving forward is I'm 26 now in this game and I'm getting older. My goal is to help younger players come in the league field the comfort in being who they are that maybe I didn't have. And to Kaner's point, you know, he is really stepping into his own, you know, as a leader in the room that he's in now. And you can't, you know, go back in time and erase what's happened. But I think as leaders in the game, we're in a powerful place to act differently and create cultures accordingly that we would desire when we came up. Now moving forward, very similar to like the, you know, the Chara comment. Chara had made comments about how hard older guys were on him and things like that when he came into the league, and he's a monster. I don't know how guys bullied him. You know, but he said, when I get to a position of power, things will be different. And good for him. And that's kind of a similar goal that I have in my mind day in, day out in our room.
When a guy like a Chara says that, you know, when I get older and I get into a position of power, things are going to change, that makes me think about a lot of talk about change. And how do we, or how do you guys as players, hold the hockey world accountable for the change that they want to be a part of now, that they are saying that in this moment in time, they want to make sure that things are different? Evander, I'll let you start.
I think it goes back to, you know, the group that you know, we started with the Hockey Diversity Alliance and the players that we have on board there. You know, we came together to not only to create change and promote the game to different groups, but to hold the league and the higher ups accountable and be a buffer there. I think it's extremely important, because the excuse of holding yourself accountable, you know, is no longer. We've had 30, 40, 50 years to do that. It hasn't happened. And I think, you know, we wanted to take it upon ourselves as minority players in the league to be a part of that and to finally stand up for what we believe in and step out and speak up and come as United Front. We understand there's strength in numbers. We need players like Jacob, like Connor, to be a part of that message, to be a part of that accountability. And I think it's great that they're on. And I really appreciate both of them saying the things they're saying, because it's true and you can hear how genuine it is. But that can't be said about some other people. And I think that's where the education part comes in and the listening. And I think it's important for people to have an interest, because we haven't been interested in these topics in the past. It makes you wonder why now. You can point to the George Floyd killing, you can point to social media, you can do all those things, but you have to ask yourself why the interest now. And I think understanding what's gone on throughout time and understanding, yes, we have to move forward, but you have to, I believe Connor said that you have to acknowledge the problem. You have to acknowledge the fact that, you know, we have made mistakes or you have made mistakes as individuals. And in order for people to get on board and accept, you know, you wanting to create change and move forward, you have to make those acknowledgements.
I do appreciate that statement, because, you know, as individuals, and I think Jacob, you can attest to this as well, that we have to look within ourselves before we can become better people. And I think that happens to individuals as well as an industry. What do you guys want to see happen as far as policy goes from the league? Jacob?
As far as policy goes, oh man, I'll have to think about that for a second. But no, to speak to Evander's point just about the listening, I think for my wife and I, we adopted a black daughter last April. We had her from birth, and we weren't seeking out a black daughter. We're just kind of open to whatever God gave us. But that really opened our eyes and opened our hearts to everything that's going on, not just within the game of hockey, but within society. And I think, like Connor said, and like Kane said, is just acknowledging the past and being educated on what the truth is behind American history and just what it was built on. And, like I said, that's really been eye-opening to my wife and I, and we're continuing to learn. And I think the biggest thing he said was to listen to those of color that have gone through it, that have experienced it. Can't tell you how many people I've heard say, I don't think racism exists because I don't see it happen. And then you look at who they're surrounding themselves with, and it's just a bunch of white people. And so to actually sit down and listen to the experiences of black people is truly eye-opening and heartbreaking at the same time. But as far as policy goes, I think it does start within the walls of the room and making sure you're calling out even just the little comments that go on within the game of hockey, within the walls, within the guys, and just, like I said before, being that ally for people of color. But as far as like league-wide policy goes, I think probably having a stricter set of rules for racist slurs, and things along those lines, is just being stricter on those and not allowing any room for error and those sort of things.
Connor, have you thought about policies yet? I mean, policy is a big thing, because once you put it down on paper, that's where it lives. And I hate to put you guys on the spot that you may not have even thought about the policies, but is there something that you personally would like to see from the league?
Yeah, I think we need to be, you know, like Kaner said, there's been a long time to get it right. And I think there's a societal acknowledgement that we haven't thus far. So whether that's fresh voices, new voices, weighing in on the subject, like there needs to be some creativity and a more nuanced, you know, conversation. So policies for me, and what I would look for, I guess, and what I would consider a policy I'd be really excited to stand behind would be things of real texture. So how to get more black players in the game? Well, you know, the NHL in theory is the best players make it, so you've got to create more best players. How can we do that? Can we go down to the grassroots level? Can we allocate certain percentages of dollars. I don't know how the NHL runs. You know, is there a league-wide program? Is it more on the individual team to grow the game in their grassroots area? How can we ensure that some of those dollars are funneled to areas or groups of people that can benefit to make the game more diverse at the player level? At the front office level, because I know that's, you know, an issue too in terms of, you know, whether there's, you know, not enough black GMs, black marketing, you know, advisors, yada, yada. How can you improve the talent pool so that people are more excited to hire? You know, maybe, you know, I know the NFL has, what's the name of the NFL rule where they, it's mandatory you interview a black candidate?
The Rooney Rule.
Right. So, you know, is that something that improves the quality of experience for black candidates every time that they interview, right? Because that's something that a lot of NHL teams you'll hear when they make hires. This man or woman has NHL experience, hockey experience, marketing experience. So for me, I think, and this is where I think the strength of Kim's language was in her articles, was it was very precise. And I think we need to get away from like the abstract, like away from like the hockey is for everyone month, and really have concrete texture to our plans that lead to the results that we're looking for. And I mean, for me, that's kind of a big up here, pulling the strings policy, you know, decision making. That's not where I spend a lot of my time thinking. You know, I'm more so, you know, trying to look in the mirror and really ensuring that my character behind closed doors, you know, at a family barbecue where, you know, someone says something in a locker room where someone thinks a joke that's funny, that's not funny. And having conversation that is uncomfortable at the time. You know, you need some, it's the same thing as a hockey game. Hockey game's going one way. There's a whole lot of momentum going against your club. You got to fight. You got to score. You got to hit somebody. You got to do something to create some conflict and change the momentum tide. And the facts are, we're unhappy with the way hockey is going. There's been some chaos and social unrest that is appropriate for George Floyd and the woman that called the police and the gentleman that was bird watching. I'm forgetting the name right now.
Yeah, Central Park.
Yeah, in Central Park, you know exactly what I'm talking. I mean, horrifying. And those issues bleed into our game, and there's an opportunity to change the tide of momentum. It's going to require some conflict or change, because the policy is, I think, just a little abstract. I would look for texture and true actionables, deliverables.
Evander, have you thought about policies yet? I know the Alliance is talking about a lot of different issues right now, but you personally, is there any sort of policies that you would like to see the NHL implement?
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned policy. That was kind of at the top of our list with our Alliance, and it's something that, you know, I brought up early on when we first started talking, because policy doesn't require any money. It doesn't require, you know, any active work. You know, it requires just thinking and conversation and listening and learning. And I think policy at the NHL level, yeah, there's some definitely tweaks we need to make. There's some things we need to implement. You know, I look at the whistleblower policy, and I think you go back to the Akeem Alou story. What if there's another Akeem Alou story? How is that person who is holding that colleague or that player accountable going to be protected so that he's not reprimanded? He doesn't suffer any consequences. He's not maybe getting, you know, his opportunities aren't squashed based off him coming out and holding somebody accountable. I think in a way he should be, for lack of a better term, rewarded or uplifted by his peers for coming out and having that accountability amongst his peers. So that's one policy. And a lot of these policies, though, I think need to be implemented not only by the NHL, but with organizations such as Hockey Canada and USA Hockey, because you talk about the grassroots level and where you need to make the biggest change. Those organizations have the most power to be able to create that change. And we've actually, I've had some really good discussions with Tom Rennie of Hockey Canada this past week. And I think they've been extremely receptive to a lot of the policy changes that we'd like to make and see within their organization. And I know USA Hockey and reached out to myself a few days ago, and we're going to be having conversations with them. But, you know, to Connor's point, you know, I think it just goes back to one of the policies we have written down, obviously in a lot of details, prioritizing minorities and growing the game. You don't have to be a player to be involved in hockey. There's so many ways you can be involved in hockey, you know, yourself being a great example of that. And we need to be able to promote that. And at the same time, I'm not saying we need to be picking black players over white players if the black player isn't as good as the white player. That's the last thing I want. You know, I want the best of the best.
Yeah, you don't want me. You don't want me as your line mate.
No, we're not. You know, we're not looking for that. But what we want to do is we want to give opportunities to minorities so that they have the same opportunity to be able to compete, grow, and, you know, maybe accomplish their goal as, you know, white players have had, you know, for a long time. And in Canada, being such a big hockey market, has a big role to play in that. But we also have to introduce and educate diverse communities and people to the game of hockey, because it's a great game. It's the best game in the world. Mm-hmm. And it's a shame that there's not more interest in it, but we have to create it. We have the people to generate that interest. We just don't use it.
Yeah. I agree with you 150%, my friend. And I'll say this to you guys. I've always thought, since I've kind of gotten into the whole hockey space, I've always thought that one of the biggest issues in the game of hockey is inclusivity. Not so much diversity, because the game of hockey has always been diverse, not as diverse as we want it to be, but black people have been playing hockey since the late 1800s. So we're in the mix. The problem for me is the inclusivity. So for example, being able to travel to different hockey markets and working with a lot of hockey teams. And you guys, I want you guys to actually open your blinders and look at this. Especially in the States, a lot of the, you know, the ticket takers, the concession, the people that clean, black and Hispanic. But the deeper you get into the organization, the less diverse it is. It's more white. So I feel like if the game became a lot more inclusive, you'll have a lot more opportunity for people of color. So I think to Vander's point, if hockey were to be able to set up a system where they would give minorities an opportunity to be a part of an organization or a team, it will open up more doors and more thoughts and more conversations. So for example, Kane, are you talking to Tom over at Hockey Canada? Like, the first thing I'm saying is, have you guys thought about hiring more people of color inside your organization? Because then you'd get better perspective, because they can't come to you all the time, Evander. You know, you're playing, you've got other things that you have to do. But if they had somebody working within that organization, that situation, it might be a lot different. Jacob, would you agree or disagree with what I just said there?
I would definitely agree. Actually, my wife and I, right now we're kind of going through it with our daughters. Right now we're at an all-white church, and so we're seeking out a different church. And it's hard with COVID; we actually can't go in person and meet. But it has to be a church that starts with the staff, because it's hard to find a diverse church that doesn't have a diverse staff. And so, all to your point here of making the staff diverse, it starts from the top down. And what does that staff look like? What do the higher ranking officials look like for different organizations is just going to make it that much more inclusive the lower you get and the lower the people coming to work for you are. I think it starts from the top down. So 100% agree with that.
Connor, what did you think about the statement Black Lives Matter when you first heard it compared to now?
I think right now society is particularly sensitive to acknowledging the wrong, and the pain has been front and center of Black people in this country. And when you look back to Colin Kaepernick, what was, you know, the response when, you know, he was kneeling during the anthem? I don't remember great defense around his message. I remember a lot of criticism for what he was going through. And then years later, now we're, because these voices of social unrest, the people that are really trying to bring light to this feel unheard, the volume turns up, and now there's issues within the media of the rioting, right? So if we had heard the message earlier and been more sensitive to really listening at an earlier date, maybe we could have prevented the escalation. But, you know, what do you hear when you feel unheard? It's very common to turn your volume up. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that was the very natural and, you know, honestly, I feel appropriate response at the time. And so for me, Black Lives Matter, I didn't have the emotional response that I do now. I think I was a little out of touch. And further to your point, Kwame, in terms of needing workers within the front office, people in positions of power, Evander Kane has dealt with experience of racial bias in hockey his whole life in a way that I can't. In the same way, I'm more equipped if I were to go on and apply for a GM someday and that I play in the NHL versus someone that didn't. So you only have the life experiences that you do. And I think if we acknowledge that race is an issue in hockey, you need to empower people who are more familiar with the ins and outs of racial injustice in our game in order to be, because they're more aware of the nuances of the problem to be able to come up with, you know, solution-based thinking. That's my thought.
I agree with you. Evander, what were your thoughts when you saw teams actually say the words Black Lives Matter? I know that in New Jersey, they actually, I think, I'm not sure what rink that was, but they...
I think it's our practice rink.
Is it your practice rink?
Yeah.
I mean, it's in the ice right now. So I wanted to get your thoughts because that is direct statement saying that we are a part of this movement.
I think we need to come together as a league. You know, I think there's certain organizations, there's certain teams that are maybe a little bit more proactive than others with regards to wanting to promote the necessary change, not only socially, but within our game. And you see that. You've seen examples of that. And I think, you know, I look at our organization, I'm proud to be a part of it. I'm proud that, you know, our captain was one of the first white players to come up and come forward. And, you know, our owner and Hustle Plotner, being the first and only owner to give a personal statement regarding the matter. And I think what it does is it just, you know, it empowers you to be that change, to be a part of the solution instead of just being a bystander and watching things pass. And I think we need a little bit more participation, not only verbally, but with some true action within the hockey community. And I hope we can get there at some point.
Mm-hmm. You know, just going back to the Alliance, how can fellow players support the Alliance and how do you engage with other players to be a part of and help that movement? I mean, you've got Jacob and Connor right here. How do you engage those guys to you know, get them a part of what you guys are planning on doing?
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe some bad examples because I think in listening to them, they've, you know, have been listening and have been, you know, learning and taking a genuine interest in what's going on and truly want to be a part of that solution. So I applaud them for that. I think they're leaders in that regard, you know, with what they've done so far and listening to them speak. But again, I think it's important to for other players and white players, because let's be honest, there's 90% of the league or 95% of the league is white, is made up of white players, and we need them as allies. We need them to back up us and what we're saying as minority players, and to understand that, you know, we just want this league to grow. And you can look at it from so many different avenues in terms of what growth is. If I'm talking to an owner, you know, I'm going to talk dollars and cents because that's what they understand. That's what they hear. Well, if we grow our game and our game becomes more diverse we stop looking like we did back in 1950, well, we're going to create more revenue. Well, creating more revenue, that's going to mean more dollars in everybody's pockets. We should grow again. We have the best game in the world. You know, I look at, you can add it, you look at the money issue in terms of why. Connor McDavid is the best player in the league. His skill level and talent is on the LeBron James type level. But why is there such a massive discrepancy in how much, what their earning capabilities are? I'll tell you why. Because we're not as popular. But why aren't we as popular? It's not because our game sucks. It's not because we're not entertaining. It's not because we're not skilled as athletes. It's because we don't promote our players and we don't grow our game and we don't showcase individuality in our game. And fans and kids growing up, they love that type of stuff. I love that type of stuff. You know, how many black kids grew up being massive fans of Allen Iverson? You know, like that was everybody's favorite basketball player, or Michael Jordan. And we have to get to that level in the NHL. Connor McDavid should be making $50 million a year, just like LeBron James.
Right.
It's because of revenue, and we don't promote diversity in our sport. You know, we don't promote the black athlete in our sport or the minority in our sport. People don't know. I was at the ESPYs one time. I was in an elevator before the show, and it was maybe 3 years ago, and a woman walks in. She's like, "You must be an athlete." I said, "Yeah." She's like, "What do you play?" And I said, "Yes." She's like, "Basketball." "Nope." "Football." "Nope." "Baseball." "Nope." She's like, and then she thought about
what else is
there? Soccer? And I said, "No." She went on as far to say cricket before she even thought about hockey.
Right.
That's not insulting to me. That's insulting to our sport. That's insulting to our league. Right. You should take that personally. Hockey didn't even cross her mind as a black person being able to play that sport.
And I also think it's about the organization of hockey taking advantage of moments. So, for example, you know, Tiffany Haddish, one of the most popular comedic actresses right now, had made a great comment towards Evander Kane's body issue. And it was, I don't know how many people had liked it and retweeted it, but it was big. Queen Latifah was even on there. You have to be able to recognize these moments and take them and say, how do I promote that even more? So, for example, you go in and you grab Evander Kane, you grab Tiffany Haddish, you have them do a commercial, you have them do something together, and that also helps grow the game because you're showing that celebrity. One of the things I've always said was that there's moments in life that you have to take advantage of. I know in the 90s, hockey sweaters were huge in the hip hop community. Like everybody wanted a hockey sweater. I mean, I remember, and I'm the old guy here amongst you guys, but I remember when Snoop Dogg was on Arsenio Hall's show and he came out in the Toronto Maple Leafs shirt, and everybody in Toronto wanted to wear that. So I think we need to take advantage of these situations to Evander's point. But I wanted to just shift a little bit up and talk about change and how do we make change? And I'll answer that question first because I believe that the game, you know, for the game to become more inclusive, it's going to take more than just the NHL. It's going to take more than just the Alliance. It's going to take more than just the four of us here right now. We're going to have to do this all together. We're going to have to stay in our own lanes and we're going to have to contribute to the game as we see it and do our little part to make it big. So for example, for myself, as a filmmaker, as a former radio announcer, what I want to do personally, my mission is I want to normalize black and minority faces and voices in the hockey space. So, Jacob, for you, how do you feel like you'll best be able to contribute to make this game a better game?
I think for myself, just continuing to educate myself and learn and grow, but at the same time, not just letting it be 1, 2, 3 social media posts and just staying in that social media lane, but also just taking it into live action within my team, within my circles of friends that enjoy the game of hockey itself, whether as fans, as players, past teammates, or whatever it is, but just not not being silent in those moments when something's said that isn't right, but being a true advocate for the game to be inclusive of everybody. And so just really, really making sure I'm a true ally and not just one through the screen.
Connor, I want you to add on to that. What are some of the things that you individually want to do to contribute to the growth of the game of hockey when it comes to diversity and inclusion?
Yeah, I think a cause I've championed for some time is mental health improvement in the athletes and at large. But I also, it's sort of 1A and 1B, but one of the other is players where financially the game's more challenging for them. I think our game, just given the fact the ice got to be frozen, the equipment's not cheap. If I could either be generous with time to coach underprivileged athletes, drive equipment. Doesn't Wayne Simmons have something he's doing right now? I'm forgetting his.
He has the Warriors. He has Wayne's Warriors. He's had that. I'm not sure if that's how that is right now, but that's what he was working with for the last couple.
Yeah,
of years.
Yeah, so I would love to be generous with, you know, any celebrity I could create, any time, you know, that I could make available to, you know, provide positive experience, coaching, education in the game, so we can have, you know, more Evander Kanes on TV, on more Wayne Simmons, you know, in the game, more PK Subbans. And you know, Kwame, I think the goal there is more along the lines of inclusivity, like you were mentioning, than diversity. You know, hockey is often a game of extras. Kids get invited to extra skates. Coaches allow, you know, players to come on with the older group. Can we be more inclusive to athletes where access to those extra opportunities might be more demanding? And those circumstances tend to show themselves. And you know, my goal is to be the leader that's needed in those circumstances.
I just got a couple more questions for you guys, and I thank you guys so much for your time and being a part of Soul on Ice, the podcast. Jacob, you mentioned your daughter. She's adopted. Where is she from? Where is she originally from?
North Carolina, actually, here in North Carolina.
Okay, beautiful girl. I saw a picture of her on your Instagram. And I wanted to ask you, I was very curious about this, because you said it yourself. You didn't adopt a daughter that was Black. You just, you know, what God gave you is what you accepted and you have taken into your family. Did you, when you realized she was Black, at some point, did you and your wife understand that by adopting a Black child comes a responsibility of teaching her or giving her access to understanding her history and the issues she may face growing up?
Yeah. The adoption agency we had gone through, they told us a little bit about it and just how certain things of your life were going to have to change, but we didn't necessarily realize at the time how deep that actually goes. And so I'm thankful for my wife, because she has been, she really, really dove into it. And a lot of the stuff I've learned from her, but the only people she's learning from is actually from, whether it's Black adoptees or Black mothers who are trying to help white adoptive parents raise their Black children. And so she's been learning from the right people as well. But just how important it is to make sure they grow up knowing who they are, or who she is as a woman. And our job as parents, is for my wife and I, is make sure she knows who she is in Christ, but then who she is as a strong Black woman. And so we've definitely, even just with the whole church thing, that's been
You might have to switch some churches. You might have to go to an all Black church, bro.
Exactly. Yeah.
Learn
exactly.
To sing and so dance, bro.
Exactly. we've gone to went to one with her birth mother. We have a really open relationship with her, which has been awesome. And we went back to her home church, and it's definitely just a different culture. And so, making sure we raise her in that. But yeah, we're learning through that and growing through that. But it takes effort, because from what we've heard from other Black adoptees, is that if they're raised by white parents in a white world, they grow up with such an identity crisis, because they don't stick in with the white people, right? They stand out. And then when they go and hang out with the Black community, they don't fit in there either, because they don't know how to act Black. Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's an acting black. I think what it is is when, you know, for a child that's grown up in a white society from an adopted, they are looked at as black, and they're going to get into a situation where that is actually called out. And then when they try to go to be around black friends may look at them and say, oh, you're whitewashed or something like that. And that's one of the things you have to look out for. And I think that all stems in, again, the people that you guys are around, the things that you're teaching her, the things that you're showing her, the love that you're showing her through Christ. Again, like, I think you're in a perfect situation that you will be able to teach her to be, to love herself. And with that, would you consider putting her into hockey?
If she wants to grow up to play hockey, I would be more than ecstatic to put her in a pair of ice skates, but we're going to let her do what she wants to do when it comes to that. But you can bet she runs around with a little hockey stick already. So I'm excited to see what she grows up to play.
How do you guys compare the efforts of other leagues compared to the NHL when it comes to the game of hockey? I'll let you start, Connor, then Evander, I want you to weigh in as well.
I think our closest relative would be basketball. I think, we share similar seasons, similar length. But basketball, they nail it. There is sort of this there is this celebration, I think, of the individual where, you know, like Kaner was mentioning, they are more equipped with the permission to be themselves. I think there's the best way I know that is I am not an avid basketball fan, but, like, I know who Steph Curry is. I know who his wife is. I know she's into cooking. I know who his shoe line's with. I know James Harden. I know LeBron James. I know about the school that he's, constructed. Like, the information has a way to getting to even the casual fan in a way that hockey has not been successful at. And I think we need to empower the individual to be themselves. We need to leverage the interesting nuances and personalities of our game, because people are drawn to stories and people like them. They want to know the ins and outs of people. They don't want the cliche answers that everyone gets in hockey interviews. They want to know who Connor McDavid is. They want to know who Sidney Crosby is behind. And I'm not saying they have to volunteer if it's not their style, fine, but for the guys that do care to be a little more vibrant with who they are, there shouldn't be the backlash that there has been. And I think one of the NHL's shining examples is sort of the Pittsburgh-Washington rivalry. You know, you kind of had this Captain Canada, very clean-cut, oriented, looking Sidney Crosby, this very beastly, over-the-top, big celebration, Alex Ovechkin, contrasting people, contrasting players. And I remember growing up, like, I couldn't wait to watch those series. Like, I was emotionally invested in a way that even other rivalries where it was team versus team weren't as exciting for me. So I think in terms of hockey, we have a long way to go in sharing our story. We have great stories to be told about people and players in our game. And there's more of that. I mean, look at, I just read it the other day, Artemi Panarin. There was a Players Tribune article about his upbringing in Russia and how he grew up with the game with his grandpa. The respect I have for his development now. I was always a huge Panarin fan. He's a stud in our game. But just what he's gone through to reach the superstar that he has, like, it's incredible. Like, we need to share our stories with fans. It'll be better for our game. It'll bring more money to our game. It'll be more money to our players. It'll be more money to the grassroots level. There'll be more rinks. And I think that is, what we can do better. And I think that lies in the power of the individual.
I mean, Connor, he nailed his points. I couldn't agree more with what he said. You talk about some of the – sorry, my wife just got home. My dog's all excited.
It's all good. I got construction guys outside now trying to do work, so we're all good, though.
I think back to the point of, you touched on how he was so excited about the Sidney Crosby rivalry with Ovechkin, right? Those are two players, right? You fall in love with players as a kid. Mm-hmm. And whatever, if my favorite player growing up was Joe Sakic, or Peter Forsberg, for example. So I was a big fan of the Colorado Avalanche. It wasn't because I grew up in Colorado. It wasn't because I love the city of Colorado. It was because I like the freaking players that they have. They're my favorite players on that team.
That was my favorite team, too.
Yeah. Same guy. And if Sagic and Forsberg were on the Nashville Predators, well, guess what? The Nashville Predators would have been my favorite team.
Right, I gotcha.
As a hockey culture, we're always about what's on the front of the jersey, and that's great. That's, you know, that's understandable. But at the same time, we don't give the importance that it deserves for the name on the back and how we promote and sell our game. Like he said, he knows who Steph Curry and James Harden are, and he knows things about their personal lives. You know, because that information is so easily accessible. It's promoted. It's used to help promote and showcase him as an athlete. Steph Curry, for example, is an athlete, which if he's more popular, well, guess what? He plays in the NBA. So the league is going to become more popular. The more popular your players are, the better it is for the league.
They're good teammates as well.
For sure. No, for sure. And honestly, I mean, that has nothing to do with it in terms of growing the game and the popularity of the sport. But and I make this joke, and this isn't me trying to talk myself up, but I'm telling you right now, if you walk down the street in LA with myself and Connor McDavid, I don't know who would get recognized more.
Mm, interesting.
I think I might. That's and I'm not sitting here saying I'm a shrub. That's the last thing I'm saying. You know, but don't you think that's ridiculous? That'd be like having Lance Stevenson and LeBron. I'm not Lance Stevenson, but just can you imagine Lance Stevenson and LeBron James walking down the street in Montreal, Quebec, and Lance Stevenson getting recognized more than LeBron?
Right. There's a lot to be done, yeah. And I think, you know, you guys, I mean, the reason why I wanted to do this with the three of you guys, because I've got high respect for where you were. Jacob, I really love your story. Connor, you know, again, just meeting you at Y Class, I thought you were down. And Evander, you've always been one of my favorite players. And I always thought that, you know, a guy like you could help promote the game of hockey in the Black community. And I'd like to see that more. And I will challenge you with that, Evander, as an individual, that wherever city you play in, I mean, you're playing in San Jose now, but I'm saying take the time to go into the Black community and say, hey, I'm Evander Kane. I look just like you, and I play this game of hockey, and so can you.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I've done ever since I've come to the league in Atlanta.
You know, did they miss the boat with Atlanta?
Huh?
Did they miss the boat with Atlanta?
I loved Atlanta. I thought it was great. I think, you know, you talk about a perfect city to kickstart off the inclusivity within the Black community, with how diverse a city Atlanta is. My goodness, I loved it. I think they, you know, you talk about me entering the league as a top pick in a city like that and having a Black player on your team, for what, you know, obviously they're picking for the future. And I mean, talk about missing the boat, not only as an organization, but as a league, because, you know, that would have been a great opportunity. But again, it goes back to the original point, is there wasn't an interest in this topic 12 years ago.
Just the simple fact that Little John was trying to keep the team in that city says a lot. And again,
it's taken a lot of different Black fans. You know, I met Chris Tucker at a basketball game. The next night, I have him coming to a Thrasher game. You know, there were so many great opportunities that were missed. Not necessarily for lack of effort, but I think lack of interest and obviously lack of execution on everybody's part.
Well, I think, you know, just by this conversation that we're having, we all know. And, you know, I want you guys to hold me accountable as a person that makes content for the National Hockey League and just the industry of hockey. And I want to also be able to hold you guys accountable for watching you guys going down the road and what you're doing. And I've got you guys' email address, so I'll stalk the hell out of you guys right now and just bug you. But I got two more things before we go. Connor, talk to me a bit about your podcast. It's a very interesting take, my friend. And I don't want to spoil the plot, but can you, in a nutshell, just let everybody know what your podcast is about and, you know, what you're trying to express.
My goal is to help people become more curious competitors in whatever their field is, and how to, with the power of, you know, our guests and sharing a little bit about their story, help people feel empowered to curate their own habits and their own skill sets through life. And, you know, just to speak about the different cultures, I was just watching The Last Dance, everybody was, right, with Jordan, mm-hmm. which also highlights the key of recognizing big moments. So the whole world's sitting at home, and the Jordan documentary team recognizes, okay, we got Sunday night open. Let's pump these things out. Let's make sure that we get people to see these. And it was captivating. It was all my friends were talking about for quite some time. But the night, literally the night that I released the podcast, I announced I was doing it, I was nauseous from like fear of judgment. All I could think about was other players. Who does this kid think he is? From GMs, coaches, I'm thinking to myself, what if I say something that's inflammatory and I am, you know, blackballed or you know, there's a cloud cast upon me. And then I'm thinking, I'm watching The Last Dance and Dennis Rodman's in Las Vegas midseason for 3 nights. And I'm thinking to myself, like, the difference in culture, the difference in individual personality is so vast. And I'm not saying we need to be completely like them. I'm not saying basketball should be more like us. I just think that there are lessons to be learned from what's been well executed on the games side of other sports and on the business side of other sports. And hockey has always taken great pride in being set in our ways. I think it's a time to refresh in that. So that was the long-winded answer of what my podcast is all about. But Kwame, we're teammates in this. And just like a great teammate, you know, if I got a friend of mine in practice that's having a great skate, he's got the juice that day, I'll let him know. But if there's a teammate, you know, I'm wide open and you know, I felt like they looked me off or, you know, they're not doing their best to, you know, be their best day in, day out, I'm going to let that person know. So I expect, you know, the same culture here and, you know, we can keep each other honest and growing in the right direction that way.
I love it. Jacob, are you a music guy?
Not really.
Not really.
I mean, I like music. Yes, I like music. I love Christian hip hop. But from the stance of, do I have a musical bone in my body? Absolutely not.
I mean, in the sense that you listen to music on the way to the rink and all that, right?
Yes.
Okay. So bust this. At the end of every So On Ice, the podcast, we like to do this thing called the top five. And so here's the scenario, Jacob, I'm going to give it to you first. You're on your way to the rink. It's game 7, Stanley Cup Finals. You've had a hot last couple of games, but this one is going to be tough. What are the 5 songs you're going to listen to get yourself pumped up and hyped before the game? I'll give you a second.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be a lot of Lecrae and Andy Mineo, but my favorite song by Lecrae is, we're going to go with Coming in Hot.
Okay.
By Lecrae, You Can't Stop Me by Andy Mineo, Superhuman by Andy Mineo. This is a tough question.
It is.
This is a really tough question.
You just got 2 more, brother. I know. Connor's right now. He's thinking about it right now. So,
I'm jumping.
I think we lost Evander. I'm not sure, but it's okay.
Tell the World by Lecrae.
Okay.
And probably Sweet Victory by Triple E.
Okay. I'm going to have to look up those songs. Yep. Connor, your scenario is different. This is your top five. You're on the way. You're about to play the Toronto Maple Leafs, my friend. And I know you got a little angst against the Leafs. So what are the top 5 songs you're going to be listening to get you jacked up to play against the Leafs?
Yeah, I got some demons there ready to slay the dragon. we got Gotta Have It, Kanye West. Any of the old 50 Cent stuff. We'll go with Candy Shop.
Okay.
We'll go with whatever the Vegas, I actually found it on SoundCloud, where the Vegas Gold Knights, like, pregame warm-up. That's on there for sure. That okay. place is bananas when you play there.
Yeah.
The White Stripes, Seven Nation Army.
Love it.
And then number 5, we'll go with like something dark, like some classical music or something before, you know, just to calm the nerves before the match, bring the energy down a little bit before I go to war.
I love that. I love that. Guys, thank you very much for your top five. Thank you very much for being on the opening episode of Soul on Ice, the podcast right here on the NHL family of podcasts. I think we lost Evander Kane. I'm not sure what happened with his connection, but it's all good. He held it down. Jacob, you held it down. Connor, you held it down. And I appreciate you guys. Jacob, how can people find you on social media?
Instagram, Twitter, jslavin74. And then, oh man, I just got on Cameo too. We're trying that out. And so I think it's just Jacob Slavin on that one. Jacob with two C's though.
All right. Connor, if anybody wants to reach out to you on social media and listen to your podcast, how can they get you?
I'm on Instagram and Twitter at Connor Carrick, ConnorCarrick, just my full name. The Connor Carrick podcast is the podcast. I talk about it a lot on my Instagram. DM me, reach out anytime. I try to touch base with, you know, fans. And I was a fan once, and I know how much it would mean to be able to talk to, you know, a favorite player or someone I looked up to in our game, in our league. So I try to make myself available there as much as I can. Reach out anytime. Look forward to connecting with whoever feels the urge.
It's a great podcast, and you guys are great people for the game of hockey. So thank you guys so much. I went over time, but man, that's how I get busy. You know what I mean? I can't stop, won't stop. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Good. Thanks for having us.
Time well invested, Kwame. Thanks, brother.
Thank you, guys. Take care of yourselves, and we'll be in touch.
Peace, man. Well done.
Yeah.
Nice.
Our soul on ice, 'cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the proof is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you like you need me. I need you like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. Yeah, soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice.
Nice.
You goddamn right, I'm screaming on that beat. I got a match screaming on the streets. We in the club, stadium, and the arena, cousin. Put me on ice and I'm hitting that top. Cheese a dozen, fussing, fighting with myself is enticing. My enemies in the mirror, and he's always reciting the poetry of my power. Statistic of my weakness, shadow boxing with Tyson. I'm trying to show y'all I'm beating them to the punch. Competition on the table, which time for lunch? Though my mission is unstable, I'm scoring once, twice, three times, and I'm taking hats. Men lie, women lie, progress is based upon the facts. So let that baby shine. They sold a show and older, they live within the grind. Now take them out that stroller, 'cause coming up is a champ. Prediction of Ali, he changed his name to Muhammad. We changing free to a fee, it's up to me. And when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. 'Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the proof is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you like you need me. I need you like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. Soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice.
Nice.
Let's dedicate this one to Jade and Linda. Let's escalate to Caddy, crush the Pinto. Or maybe you prefer that Benz, why? That big truck, I don't give a f***, only really want a house where to get by. Let's take it far down on the competition. Competition is nonsense, it's me and my soul's decision. Yeah, I only work against myself. I play against you to bench you. I'm throwing all shots to the shelf. Yeah, the top is the topic. You checking your armor. My wheel telescopic, so I'm steering my karma. The future is mine, like receiving the past from Jesus or Jordan or Crosby, Stills and Nash. Young, and when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. 'Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the proof is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you like you need me. I need you like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. Soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice.
Nice.